I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
I'm going to try and live. I am going to try and I'm going to go for it. And I remember thinking at a very young age, at 13, like, you better give it a shot and be willing to embarrass yourself. I remember thinking that so clearly, having that in me for whatever reason.
Welcome back, y'all. Welcome back. Welcome back. The song by Mace. Welcome back. I'm so sorry. I'm in a weird mood. I'm always in weird moods when I record the intro outros. I normally record them. You know what? True story. I'm lazy. What happens is I will record with the guest, and it's always a great recording. And then I will not immediately record the intro outro right after. So it'll be days after, sometimes weeks after. And then I'm just like in a weird mood. This is my third time trying to record the intro outro. One time I tripped up because I was trying to be inclusive with the weather and how the weather may or may not be making you feel. That's weird, y'all. That is weird on my part, and I still had to let you see that. I had to let you glimpse into that. And I say that because it's warm here. It's nice. It's sunny. I live in New York City where, you know, since COVID, we have these things called open streets. They've opened up this week where they shut down the avenues and people just get to, like, you know, be on the streets and no cars allowed. I love it. It's amazing. People with cars fucking hate it, and that kind of makes it even better. But if you don't live in a major city where a very walkable city, I don't know if that would make sense either, if you'd feel the way, the same way. But it's great. I fucking love it. Anywho, what tangent will she go on this time? You know, her anti-car tangent on her podcast, Awkward Sex and the City. Anywho, I do love this episode. Like every episode, it's really great. I got to sit down with Maggie Lawley. We talked about her life, relationships, but the really, really cool thing that she's doing right now is her musical comedy is off Broadway at Soho Playhouse from the 19th, so that's already passed, to May 6th at 7 p.m. at Soho Playhouse. So you should absolutely, absolutely go see it. I'm going to go see it. I can't wait. It's called Sex Witch the Musical, a musical comedy. And I'm not going to give too much away because you should go see it. You should go support the arts and go see it. But we talk in this episode a lot about, you know, per usual, relationships and what our needs in relationships, and that our needs are okay, and that our needs are different from other people, even like your partner, you know, whoever you're with. And the same thing goes with like platonic relationships as well. And I feel like I've been talking about that more and more, just because I just really think like we don't talk about platonic relationships enough, and their oh my God, what's the word that I want? How they affect us, good or bad. And I don't know if you feel the same way, but like a lot of my life, it felt like, you know, love, like non-platonic relationships, not that you can't have love in platonic, but a romantic relationship was always kind of put on the pedestal. And that's not necessary. And how important it is to have friends and these very, you know, close, intimate relationships that are platonic, while also being in romantic relationships, how important that is to not put like that, all that just like on your partner, like those types of needs. This is not what we talk about neither in a relationship. Again, I'm doing a weird tangent. But we really do, we get really into like the nitty gritty of like our personal needs, from how we communicate, our communication styles, what we need, like love language stuffs. But I think, of course, there's a truck going by. Gotta love recording in New York City in your apartment. And learning how to say like that's okay of what you need. I touch on it, like I need constant validation and I need it in every aspect of my life. So not just from Aaron. A million times I'll be like, why do you love me? Do you still love me? And I'm not like exaggerating. When Aaron listens to this, he will be nodding aggressively and being like, yeah, babe, what if you stop doing that? I'll be like, list 5 reasons why you love me. And they can't be my butt or my tits. I need it in work. I need it in friendships. I need it in like my career. Like it's so, and I'm not saying that's healthy, but I do know that I need it, you know, and that it's okay to say that I need it. So we'll talk more about that. You'll listen more about that. And I hope from this podcast, 2 things happen from this episode. 1, you go see Sex Witch the Musical at Soho Playhouse. It's now on until May 6th at 7 p.m. Go see Sex Witch the Musical. Go see Maggie be fucking hilarious. I love musical comedy so much. I wish I could. I can't. And go follow her at Mags Lals, MAGSLALS, on all the social medias. And then I'm not sure when this podcast is coming out, but if it is before April 27th and you are in Nashville, Awkward Sex and City will be at Third Coast Comedy Club on the 27th. So you should absolutely come if you're in town, if this podcast airs after that, because my schedule is so scattered in my brain right now. I'm not sure when it comes out. Don't worry about it. And we'll be touring. We're taking a break, but then we start back up in June and we will be hitting some of the same cities and even some new cities very soon that I'm very excited to announce. I hope you love the episode and we'll talk soon.
So yeah, I'll start right off with Sex Witch. I have not seen it. Yes. I'm very excited. When is it happening at Soho Playhouse?
So it starts April 19th, this Wednesday. Today's Friday, we're recording this, and it goes until May 6th, so there's 12 shows in there, and I'm really excited. I hope you come see it.
Oh my God, I would love to. Love to so much. I'm loving just seeing people I know like at Soho Playhouse, like, mm-hmm. and just like, I know that they're good shows too, like,
yes, absolutely.
People are crushing it.
Yeah.
So you brought this. Did this originate in Scotland, or were you doing this play before?
I did it a couple times in New York before I did it in Edinburgh. So, I did it at Under St. Mark's and the Pit. R.I.P. Mm-hmm. Pit. R.I.P. Mm-hmm. OG Pit. That big pit.
Oh, yeah. That's where Awkward Sex started, was the OG Pit.
Yes. Amazing. Yeah. I did the Solo Comp Festival. I don't know if you did that.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Okay, cool.
I didn't do any of the festivals. I was only there,
I interned for a long time and I only did awkward sex there for like less than a year because I had a Tuesday slot. This is like, so none of this is important. I had a Tuesday slot. I was like doing really well on that Tuesday slot, like upstairs. And so I was like, give me a Friday slot. And then they're like, yeah, yeah. And then they switched their artistic director. And coincidentally, all the female storytelling shows got dropped.
What the fuck?
Yeah. That, like, it was like a very weird coincidence.
Damn. This kind of stuff happens all the time, I feel. Like in comedy in New York, it's like, oh, okay, suddenly the booker is a different person. And now there are no women around.
They wanted to.
Happens all the time.
Yeah. What he told me, I mean, this is back in like 2013, 2014 too. Yeah. Like, this was so long ago, but they were like, we want to bring in plays. And everyone was like, but that's not what like the pit is. And like, they got rid of like shows that were doing really well. Like that's what was really weird about it too. So it was like, okay.
It's bizarre.
But then,
So you're a star. So
aren't we all?
We don't need the pit.
Like, oh, sorry, go on.
No, it's funny. Honestly, when the pit closed, I was like so sad, actually. I was like, oh my God, the pit. Because I felt like that was a place that I could sort of, I would be there and I'd be like, I'd be doing stand up and then I would go downstairs and do musical improv. And then I would go upstairs and like do my sex switch show. And it was just like, man, this place, sometimes I would sleep in the attic when I was really tired. I mean, that's another thing. Yeah. I would stretch and I would nap in the attic.
I mean, like that place, like now thinking about it, is like where my life in New York City started.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah. Like met a lot of people, had sex in that place.
Wow. You had sex in the pit.
In the dressing room. That is amazing.
Oh, in the dressing room.
Yeah.
Natalie, that is amazing. Wow.
I am very proud of that. And it
that
was
is so cool.
I was dating like a house manager and he was very nervous. And I was like, but you have keys and it's the pit. Like, I don't give a fuck.
So funny. Also, those are like hot dressing rooms because the mirrors are there. So you're like obviously getting railed up against
just, like,
the mirror.
Watching it. Yeah.
And I'm watching it. Wow. This is incredible. I applaud you. That is so great.
I definitely have a like want to fuck in public places type of thing. Wow, like I've blown someone at Pioneer's Bar, like in the bathroom.
Oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah. Now I've kind of forgotten all about this. Cause I mean, like I've been with my now husband, I've been with him for 8 years. Like,
wow.
And like, we definitely did like outside stuff too, but like pit related, like, yeah, I have like fucked in those places. Like
that's
I've done.
So funny. The only thing that I can sort of, that's sort of similar that I have is that I one time had sex at Champion Studios, which is which is a rehearsal space.
Yes.
On like 18th Street or something. I forget where it is. Champion Studios, I used to rehearse there all the time for different things. Like I'd be there with all these different independent improv practice groups, you know, classic. And then I would rehearse there for a lot of different shit. Anyway, this guy that I met at this coffee shop when I was a barista in Harlem, he was a German guy and he was my customer and we would have sex. And then I was like, meet me at Champion Studios. Like as if this is like a hot place. And Champion Studios is like one of it's gross, you know, like it's not a cute, it's not Ripley Greer. Okay. It's gross. So we're in Champion Studios. He's like railing me on the ground in Champion Studios. And this discuss, by the way, we didn't even rent a rehearsal space. We snuck in.
And I had so many questions.
Yeah. And then we literally got caught. They're banging on the door. He's like fucking me. Obviously I didn't come because I was like 23 and I wasn't coming. Anyways, he's like, didn't come either. He's like, I haven't come yet. And I'm like, well, they're literally banging on the door. So I don't know what you want me to do. And it was very obvious that we were very loud. We were like fucking in this rehearsal space. And then they were banging on the door. And then I was like, get dressed. And then this guy came in and was like, get out. Like yelling at us. And we were like banished from Champion Studios.
My favorite part. My favorite part is that I love that you, it wasn't like you guys were just there. You were like, meet me
yeah
at this place. Like, meet me at Champion Studios. And then this is like so ballsy. You didn't even rent a room. Oh my God. What if you rented a room? I would have fucking died too if you rented the room just to fuck.
I like pay $20. But also like, I think I gave the receptionist like $15. Like I slipped him $15 in cash because I was like, sorry, I'm a whore or something like that. I felt like
bad
that I had snuck in. And I mean, it was, you know, I didn't feel bad about having sex there, but I felt bad that I didn't pay for the room. You know, mm-hmm. I was like, man, I am, you know, not a champion of Champion Studios. This is bad. So I felt guilty. But it was like, yeah.
Oh no, I was just gonna ask, were you like really banished? Like, have you never been back? Or were they like,
I mean, I don't think I can't remember. It's not like they were like, you are banished, but I didn't want to show my face there for a while. And I don't remember if I went back. It's also like pretty easy to rehearse in New York City if it's not at Champion Studios. It's not like I'm like, what am I gonna do mm-hmm. if I can't go to Champion again? You know, I mean, I don't think I ever went back. I can't remember though.
Yeah, because the thing about it was that it was so cheap, right? And so all the improv groups would go there. Exactly. What was the one right next to Pioneers?
Oh, well, Simple. What was it?
Was it Simple Studios?
Oh, yes. Simple Studios. Simple Studios was kind of cute.
Yeah, no,
I remember Simple Studios. It had like good snacks.
I guess snacks. It had like comedians on the bathroom doors. And one of the most embarrassing moments of my like life is and this is just it all happened in my head. But it was like the first time I took an improv class. It was at Simple Studios. And I saw, it's like a fucking what's his face, John Belushi on the dude. And I was like, okay, if it's Gilda Radner, in my mind, if it's Gilda Radner on the ladies room, I'm going to make it as a comedian.
That's
and it is.
So, oh my God. Well, look at that.
Well, has she made it? I don't know. But I'll never remember, like, I will never forget that memory of, like, you were so delusional. Like, you are hoping a picture on a bathroom in a rehearsal studio is a certain person. It's, like, your sign. Of course it's fucking Gilda Radner. Of course it was. Like, who else would it be?
Funny. You know, I remember hearing this story about Gilda Radner that she was, like, the woman in comedy that everyone wanted to marry.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
You've heard that
yes.
too? Okay.
It's in like the they talk about it in the like oral history of SNL, like yeah. that really thick book.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're just like there's something about it was like her, Jane Curtin, and then what's her face? But there was something about how wholesome she was, even though she was like had a lot of demons, obviously.
Yeah.
Everyone like she dated Dan Aykroyd, she dated Bill Murray. There's another one that she like cast member she dated too, but yes, I totally derailed you there, but yes,
no, I wanted to know more. I was like, what is it about her? I gotta be wholesome. I'm gonna be like Gilda.
That's wholesome and bulimic. That's the way to go.
Was she bulimic?
Oh yeah.
Oh my God, I didn't know that, man. I'm just not in the know.
Yeah, what's her face was like addicted to cocaine. Gilda was bulimic, and then Jane Curtin would just go home to her husband and dog.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That sucks.
Right.
All three scenarios are like, all right, well, you know, the coke thing. I don't really understand the coke. I mean, I've done coke maybe like 6 times. I haven't done it for years. It's like, it's a bit much. As a person that's like trying to go to sleep, I don't really get it. You know, I'm like, yeah. I would like to be asleep.
Yeah, it's going to do the opposite of that for sure.
No, I'm like, I don't understand people. I mean, no judgment, but I don't understand people who like in their 30s who are like doing coke. I'm like, what's, mm-hmm. why do you want to be up?
That is literally like I like coke for that reason. It's like, oh, I know it's gonna be a late night, like coke mm-hmm. is gonna keep me up, like I'm gonna be able to get to 5 a.m with a little bump here and there.
But aren't you so destroyed the next day?
The worst. It's like worst hangover poops, like the worst. Yes. Like your body just feels disgusting.
Yeah. It's scary. For sure. Yeah, it's scary. It scares me.
First 10 minutes public sex, cocaine.
champion.
This is what happens. Ugh. Champions. Do you remember your first like person you hooked up with at the pit or like comedy wise?
My God, there were so many. I feel like, oh, so I've been doing comedy for like, I've been doing stand up for about like 6 years, but then I was doing some improv before that. So I was doing, I mean, there were so many improv guys. I actually did, this is a funny story. I'll tell this. There were so many improv guys that I dated and hooked up with and like made out with. And, you know, when I was like 23, 24 and in improv classes, I was just very in my head. Like I was confident sometimes, but then I was just very, very insecure in a lot of ways. And like, you know, you do zip, zap, zop with me. Like I will fuck you, you know, like it does not take much. I'm like, okay, so he made eye contact during big booty. So I think we're going to fuck. Like, okay, like for real. And so this one, oh my God, this actually, this makes me laugh. This guy that I knew from improv, sweet guy. I haven't seen him in years. And he was very nice. We were in class together. Now I was in the stage in improv where I remember I was wearing very hideous clothing. And I don't know why. I was just like, I am going to dress really badly. Like it was an active choice because I was like, I want my improv to shine. I don't want any distractions. So I'm just going to wear like extremely baggy, like ugly shit and then like crush it at the Herald, crush the Herald or something like my, but whatever I was thinking made no sense. This guy that I met, he was in my class. We kind of had this connection. I was like, oh my God, he's like kind of hot. And then I remember inviting him to a show at Queens, the Secret Improv. Do you remember the Secret Improv Theater? Okay.
Yeah. Someone just sent me a message to go there. And I was like, absolutely what? Not. Like the only time I went there was because I was fucking not. Someone.
Right. Oh my God. So I thought that place closed, by the way.
Like, so did I. I think like, maybe it reopened.
That's so bizarre. I also remember that it smelled like really rotten milk. Do you remember that? Because I was on like a house team there or something. And I was like, why does this smell like milk? What's happening in this Secret Improv Theater? Like, anyway, so I had like this show where I was doing musical improv on a house team at Queen's Secret Improv Theater. I was really bad at improv at this stage. Like I still do it and I'm good now. But at that time I was just like making really terrible choices. I think I sang a song first. So I invited this guy from my class to come see it and like hang out with me after. So like my intention was to impress him with my show and then obviously like fuck him. Not that it matters, like they'll fuck you, you know, even if the show, they'll actually more likely to fuck you if the show's bad. Anyway, so I feel like, so oh, I did yeah. my show, I think I did like a spot song about like pedophilia and it was really awkward. I think everyone, no one laughed. I don't remember the context, but I was like, I think I was like, somehow I, you know, my teammates were like, she's a predator in this scene. I don't know. Like, it was just horrible. And it wasn't funny and it wasn't entertaining. And anyway, after that, I went back to his place and he was like, that show happened. I mean, he wasn't complimentary anyways. And then I remember we were hanging out at his house and we were getting high. And then he put on Cyndi Lauper. He started playing Cyndi Lauper. And he was playing Time After Time. And then we were super high. And I remember we were doing like a lot of stretching.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then a lot of like, we did like some kind of interpretive dance to Time After Time. Mm-hmm. And we were like, you know, like you almost like how you like do like the mirror game in improv class. It was like that. But like, we're going to fuck though. And then we fucked. And it was like fine, you know, I mean, and it was very sweet. And then I feel like the next day I made him watch this like horrifying movie called The Piano Teacher. I don't know if you've ever seen this movie. It's like a really great drama about this like French piano teacher that's into like BDSM. I mean, it's really disturbing. Okay. So this was like, that was like my first improv hookup, I think. Was like, he sees me do this horrible show. We do this like Time After Time dance. And then I make him watch this horrifying drama. And it was like, wow, like, I'm just like a girl, like out here in these streets. Okay. I'm just like an improv city chick.
Yes. And then you're like, that first couple months, you're like, I'm living my best life. I'm living my dream. Yes. This is what I dreamed of. I lived in Stafford, Virginia. And then you look back and you're like, oh my God, like what a messy little whore I was, which like nothing. I regret none of the sex, but I wish you like touched on it where you were like, they made eye contact with me. They want to fuck me. And I wish, I think we all go through that. Like all like the ladies in comedy, because there is this, like, it's not a power dynamic, but you walk into these improv places, these like hubs, and there's all these dudes that are just like chest out. I'm the fucking funniest thing in the world. Yes. And you want to impress them and be their friends. And they're also, because they're funny, like that makes them hot. And then you actually meet them and they're these insecure little babies that don't know how to fuck, aren't as funny as you think they are. And you're like actually the star and they can't handle that.
Oh yeah, totally. I felt that a lot. Now I put so many improv dudes on a pedestal, like when I was younger. And now I'm like, wow, they were such losers. Anyways.
They were such losers.
They were. And I feel like, also, and I don't know if you think about what your take is on this. I feel like when I was newer in comedy, I got asked out all the time. Like men were constantly like asking me out, trying to fuck. Now, nothing. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think that that's like, oh, I'm not desirable in some way. I think it's like, I don't know what it is. When I was newer and I was vulnerable and I seemed very insecure, they were like ready to take me out and hang out with me. No one wants to fuck me now.
Well, that's it. That's why, like, you see a lot of these. I mean, I have not been like around the improv scene in years, but you'd watch them go after the new girls every time because it was the same thing. They wanted someone that I think felt a little moldable to them and that did not scare them. But then you get your C legs and then you get your comedy legs and you're a better producer. You're a better stand up. You're a better improviser. And they can't handle that. And then that becomes like their dick just shrivels up, which like you don't want that, you know, like fuck that. But
you know, I had this tweet that did pretty well because I think it's so relatable, and it's like I got laid so much more before I had self-esteem. And I think it's so true. I mean, truly, now I'm just like, God, I can't. I'm so picky about who I date and who I'm, you know, who I'll let inside this. It's just like, it wasn't like that before. I was just so, I mean, they love the insecurity. They love it. They love it.
It's definitely like that. And it's also like, it's kind of a combination of things too. Cause I've touched upon this with like a couple of guests. It also becomes like you learn your self-worth. Like we don't have it at first.
I know.
Especially like, I just really see it in women a lot too. At first you're told, and like, I don't know where you're from, but like you just see everyone getting married really early and that's like supposed to be your life. And you may never wanted that and it didn't ever fit right. And then you get to a spot where like, oh, all these people are into me for like what I like and do. And then you realize it's kind of some ulterior motives there. And then you get a little older and you're like, well, this is what I want, this is what I need. I'm not settling. So the pool gets smaller.
Absolutely. That's how I feel now, where I'm like, oh, I need all these things for someone to add to my life at all, you know? So it's interesting how that's developed. And I think, I think every woman also, I mean, this is exhausting, but you know, like being a woman in comedy in general, I mean, it's just like, it's a whole thing. Where the second I'm on a date with a man, it's a thing. It's just a thing. I don't know what it means to them, but it means something. It's not like you walk in there and you're like, I'm in marketing, and that it means nothing. That's just a nothing. Being like doing stand up at all, it's either, and I hate to say this because I feel like people have said this all the time, and I don't want to be like, they're literally intimidated. They're literally jealous. Like they're literally threatened by me. Like, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's going on in these dudes' heads, but it's like, it's either, oh, you know, they kind of want you to be laughing at them, or they want to be funnier than you. And I'm not saying like, I'm not like the funniest person. I'm like an average comedian who's trying. But even that is like too much or something, or they're, yeah, they,
they don't really, I think it's a little bit subconscious too. I think on some level, and they wouldn't even admit to this, they don't really want to see you do well in this thing that they don't have the courage to do, maybe. And it's like, what man on earth doesn't want to do stand up? It's hard. If they're not creatively fulfilled in some capacity, that they think that they should be doing stand up. So mm-hmm. I like men who are have some creative passion that isn't that, because mm-hmm. at least they're like shining in that way, you know, mm-hmm. and they feel like they're seen and they're validated. So as long as they have enough validation in their own life or their own specific interests, then I think you have a better chance of being able to date them. But if they don't, then it's a thing. And I have dated guys who were like, you know, I dated one guy who was an audience member and I thought he was like in the film industry. Then a couple weeks into us dating, he's like, I'm actually going to do stand up. I'm going to try stand up. I'm like, oh my God, mm-hmm. so annoying. I should have broken up with him then. But then we dated for 2 years. And, you know, I mean, it was just like, I felt like, and look, I was not perfect either, but I felt like I had to carry him through these, like him bombing and not being able to handle it. And I was already mm-hmm. kind of being able to deal with that, but it's hard to hold someone's hand when you're figuring out your own shit too, mm-hmm. you know? And then it's like, why do all these men want to do stand up? It's like, just please. I try to discourage as many men as possible from doing comedy. Like when I meet a man who's like, I've always wanted to do stand up, I'm like, oh, you shouldn't. Don't do it. You're not welcome. Mm-hmm. Which I know is like fucked up because I have so many comedian male friends who are like good friends, but they're already in it. Like this isn't like a date I'm on where a guy's like, so how do I get into comedy? I'm like, oh my God. I've been in that conversation, that situation so many times. It's pretty annoying, you know?
Yeah. Cause it's you're just the mom. You're just this person's mom. And then it bleeds mm-hmm. into other things too. Like my last relationship before Aaron was like a really bad one. Comedian, shocking. And mm-hmm. it was bad for a lot of ways. And I was young too and dumb too, but like, it also like for all the reason it was bad, it was also like, I was like in a mothering role for them too. And when I got out of it, it was like, I don't fucking want that. And with like dudes, I feel like with guys that are like, have never done comedy and want to get into it, it reminds me, and I am this girl. Like when I was 13, I wanted to be a surfer, right? I wanted to surf. And I think at 13, boys wanted to be a comedian. And did they go for it? Did they not? You know, and like I never surfed until my 30s. Like then I finally like started taking lessons and stuff. But it was like I always wanted it. I always wanted that persona, that vibe, that Roxy, that Billabong. And so like I personified it as a child, never touching a board. I wouldn't touch it till I was older. But I mm-hmm. feel like it's kind of the same thing of like these men are like, that was like they were the class clown. They were this thinking it was the same thing. And it's like, it's not. Like either do it or don't, but you can't be mad at someone who went for it just because you didn't.
I know. Some
people are just pussies. It's like what I've learned growing up is most people are just pussies and just aren't willing to like try and live.
I know. And then it's like, I remember thinking at a very young age, I'm going to try and live. I am going to try and I'm going to go for it. And I remember thinking at a very young age at 13, like you better give it a shot and be willing to embarrass yourself. I remember thinking that so clearly, having that in me for whatever reason, or understanding fundamentally that failure is not really failure. It's just not trying. And I mean, obviously people say this all the time. It's very cliche. Like, you know, the real failure is not trying, but that is the truth.
That is the truth.
You know? And I struggle all the time with insecurities around being in comedy already, right? And like all of the things that come with that. But then I'm in a way, I'm so grateful that I don't have to grapple with, should I, shouldn't I do this? Because that is like a whole another level of insecurity that I'm so glad that I'm not even dealing with. At least I'm in the war and in the trenches and dealing with the trials and tribulations of being at war in comedy, you know, as opposed to being like, should I go into the army of comedy? Like, I don't even know, you know, like that's a whole nother difficult, like pussy ass bitch situation that I can't. And then it's hard. And I want to be,
And I will say, look, this was the last guy I dated, ghosted me. Very interesting. We dated for a few months and, nice guy, but I just, the whole time I never really felt like I really knew if I wanted to date this guy. I was kind of trying it out because he was such a sweet guy and seemed very ready to date me. This is like an online guy and he had his own creative passions, which I also really appreciated. But there were many moments where I felt like, you know, there was one day he was like, I'm a coward. I remember him saying that. Mm. 'Cause he like wanted to put his music out, but he couldn't, or some people from his high school were like, you're a great musician. And he's like, I don't know how to just be an average guy. That's like people, some people don't like, I'm like, oh my God, being a woman in comedy, it's like, everyone wants you to kill yourself. You know, it's like literally. So it's so hard for me to like, listen to like a 35-year-old man be like, I don't know how to be average. It's like, you just need to invite some criticism into your life. And then, you know, so then it's like, I don't, and I've been in that situation many times now, and then I feel bad. 'Cause I'm like, I sort of said that I was like, I want to be in a relationship where I'm talented and I'm going for it and you're talented and you're going for it. And then he literally said this, which I find insane. And I hope you're listening. Dude, that ghosted me, but wish him the best. Obviously a good guy, but if he's ghosting at 35, it's like, what are we doing here? Right.
Yeah. It's not cool.
And I mean, I have my issues too. Like I have a lot of emotions and I'm not, I mean, that's not an issue, but anyways, I was like, and then he goes, I'm the most talented guy you'll ever date. Like trust me. He said that. And then I made a joke about it. I was like, well, actually for your information, I've dated several magicians. So I don't think you really get talent, the talent that I've been around. But to me, that was such an insane thing to say. Now, I think he maybe walked away from this relationship thinking, wow, Maggie's a narcissist. And like, okay, yes, I'm doing stand-up. You kind of have to have a touch of narcissism to do that, right?
You have to be delusional.
You have to be delusional. And like, I have a lot of issues surrounding comedy for sure. Like I'm always scared of, you know, I just have insecurity surrounding it, but I try to stay positive and rise above them, as we all have to, right?
Yeah.
But like, I was like, so I wonder if he walked away from this relationship thinking like, wow, she's a narcissist. I don't know, whatever. He was like, I'm the most talented guy you ever date. I don't need you to tell me that I'm talented. I was like, wow. And then also what turned me off was that like, we were at some live music event and he was like, my New Year's resolution for 5 years has been to go to a music open mic. And I'm like, 5 years, this is not, you know what I mean? Like, this is just do it. Like what? It's exhausting to be around that energy, to be honest, especially when like all my friends are like powerful or like women who are just going for it. You know what I mean?
Oh
yeah.
And
then we like talk to a man that's like, not, it's like, come on, can't date you. Ghost me. Go ahead. Ignore me. Pretend I don't exist.
Like that is the saddest statement I have ever heard in my life. I am the most talented person you're ever going to date. And you've not even done an open mic. Like,
isn't that crazy?
That is narcissistic, in my opinion.
I was pretty floored by that comment. I was like, wow.
Oh, yeah.
And like, don't get me wrong, very talented guy. That was part of the reason I liked being, you know, dating him for the short time that we did. But I'm just like, what a statement. So if any of his friends are listening, that's what he said. He said he was the most talented man I'll ever date. That's a direct quote. So whatever you heard about me, I had to literally take all his friends off my Instagram story. They're all like watching my stories. I'm like, what the fuck?
Like, go away.
I'm like, and then he goes, yeah, it's so weird. And I was very nice. I was like, listen, let's have a conversation about this. Whatever. I was apologetic, you know, and then ignored me. I mean, it's like, it's a very immature thing to do, to just like ignore someone and pretend they don't exist at that age. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Like I'm talking about this on the pod all the time. I ghosted left and right.
Yeah.
In my 20s. Yeah. But never someone that I had dated.
Exactly. You can do it if it's like you went on one date or you went on two dates. It's fine. Mm-hmm. This is someone that was like in your life. It's very weird.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
But
it's okay. I mean, yeah.
Oh, I was gonna say,
it is what it is. Go ahead.
No. I'm excited. We're both excited. I love it.
Yeah.
The only thing I was going to say about that statement too, is it's like, it's so clear how terrified he is and how insecure he is in himself to say something like that. You never say that. Like, you just never say that. Like, I am a very talented person. You are a very talented person. I would never, ever be like, I am the most talented person you're ever going to meet in your life.
Isn't that weird?
Because with the delusion, with the like slight narcissism, there is also the, am I good enough
vibe
for people that are really doing it, are really in it, because you're surrounded by people that are great.
I know.
And you wonder, how do you stack up?
Exactly. Exactly.
So no one who really was in it and really felt good about it would say that. That is like That's the saddest so statement I've ever heard in my life. Like, he so clearly is so afraid of that failure. And it could be fear of success. Like, that's a real thing, but that is not something someone with a fear of success says. Like, that is just a very sad boy, scared boy.
It was a very sad boy moment. And I felt bad because, like, look, I'm not perfect, and maybe I felt like maybe emasculated him on every level that I possibly could or something in conversation. Cause sometimes when I'm like admitting to how I'm feeling about a certain situation, it's like, it all comes out, and then I'm like, fuck, I was too mean or something. And then I feel guilty, and then I'm like, God, I'm the worst. But then it's like, you know, I don't really miss that relationship. I'm just like, I can't believe that people are ghosting at this age. You know, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. And like, oh crap. What did you just say that I was going to go off on? I can't remember. Damn it. That's okay. But like, when you're in a relationship too, like, part of it is learning how the other person communicates and like learning how to go with that and compromise with that. Like, I have all the emotions. I like, me and Aaron are kind of opposite. I'm like, I want to get everything out. Once I get it out of my head and I say it out loud, it's not as scary, it's not as real, whatever that is. If I'm angry, if I'm sad, if I'm happy, if I'm mad, all of them, like any emotion. He's not the same. I have to learn how to kind of, if he needs to talk, I have to learn how to not talk, like kind of how to listen. Yeah. Like, I've learned how to listen a lot more.
Yeah.
But to your point, like, there's nothing wrong with saying how you feel, and if that person's also kind of making you feel bad about that as well too, like, that's also like, that's not cool on their part either.
I mean, who's to say? I don't know. I mean, I haven't really thought about this relation a while, but since we were talking about this, I'm like, oh right, you know, this whole situation. But yeah, it's weird. I think especially, I don't know, there's something, I mean, I also you know, I'm a bisexual person, and but you know, like most bisexual white women in New York City, it's like, I've mostly dated men, you know, I mean, listen, it's a very classic, thing, but I've just found that dynamic is just different with dudes. There's just like, it's almost like I have to operate in a different way or something. With when dating men, I'm like, oh right, I forget that you have to like really be careful about hurting their ego or something, and you really have to work on making them feel like a valued man or something. I don't know, and I don't really know how to do that sometimes, and I get exhausted.
What I'll say is that if you feel like you have to do like that type of mental load, they suck. Walk away.
Yeah.
Like there was definitely rocks and bumps with like me and Aaron the first year or two, learning like how to navigate each other. And like, he's not a comedian, but he like has dabbled. He has his own life. And that was what was really important, is he has his own life.
Yes.
Like, we both have our own lives, and we've definitely, I would never say I'd ever had to like worry about his emotions in that way. Like, obviously I'm worried about his emotions, but I've never been like, oh, I have to make sure I don't emasculate him. Actually, this is what reminds me of what you said in the past reminded me. I used to emasculate men I was dating on purpose by calling them kiddo to see how they would handle it.
Wow.
Cause I was like a big red flag for me. If like, if you can't handle a woman who's like shorter than you and maybe a year or two younger than you, being like, so what's up, kiddo? If you can't handle that because it makes you feel lesser than, but you're calling me like sweetie or girly or some shit, like, we're done. And like Aaron could handle it. And then when he found out that that's why I did it, he was like, that's weird. And I was like, is it that weird? Because you've never dated as a woman. Like you just have never had to deal with the weird shit we have to deal with.
Exactly.
But yeah, but someone like, and men and women too, like women have this issue too, but like someone who's like emotionally open to a relationship and emotionally ready to grow too, because that's kind of it for a relationship. It's like, I like this person. Am I willing to grow with this person?
Yes, absolutely.
Then you don't have to worry about that shit. Like you don't have to worry about someone freaking out. Like, yeah, they could be like, hey, that hurt my feelings because of X, Y, and Z. Like we sometimes had issues where like, I'd be like, I need you to tell me how you're feeling. And he'd be like, I feel like this. And I was like, okay, that makes me feel like this. And he'd be like, but now I feel like I can't say my opinion because you have opinions. And I was like, yeah, I have an opinion on your opinion of this argument. Like, absolutely.
Yes.
How do we get from there? Like, there's definitely like learning how to like communicate the best for each other as that couple. But if, and like, I'm just thinking of like all these like dumb like comedy boys that were like, you hurt my feelings, you did this. Like one time I was hooking up with a guy that would constantly like lead me on a red, and I was like, okay, we're not doing anything. And I started dating someone else, and he like saw me kiss this person, and he was like leaving me this like diatribe via like Facebook Messenger of like, how could you do that to me? And it's like, bitch, like we were never together. Like I'm not in charge of your emotions if you're not willing, like, and you're not willing to be with me, like, until all of a sudden there's like another thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. It was like, and I really do try to, you know, work on myself and, you know, look at, and I've grown a lot. I have a lot of work to do, of course. And I feel like you can do that in a relationship with someone that's right for you. But I just didn't sense that. There were just a lot of moments where I'm like, I don't know if this person can change this mentality surrounding this of like, I'm, because there was a lot of bitterness. It's kind of like you reach this point in your life where you have two choices. You're either going to like try to really stay positive for the most part and like go towards people who are ahead of you. Right.
Yeah.
Or you're going to live in this bitterness zone of like, I was robbed of the chance to be that. And I'm talented. And these people are not successful people. You know, they didn't earn it or something. Right. But it's like that kind of mentality just blocks you from ever being in that position yourself. So, and I felt like I sensed that from this last guy where it's like, you're kind of going toward this bitterness route of like the world owes you this and this and this. And, you know, like life is unfair. Like life sucks. You know what I mean? Life is hard, especially like when you're going, when you're pursuing something artistic, it's like, there's so much uncertainty that's involved. There's so much faith that you have to have in yourself. There's so much hard work that you have to do for like no money for a while to like, you know, to really, be in it and continue to be in it. So I feel like if you're already in that zone of like, well, I am entitled to this because I'm good, then it just doesn't make any, it's really all about the audacity. Like you have to have some talent, but then you have to really just have some audacity and be going for it at all times. And yeah, I just don't want to be in a relationship with someone that is has an ounce of bitterness. I just don't. I'm like, I cannot, because I have that in me too, but I really push it down and I really try to transform it into gratitude and hard work. Like whatever jealousy or envy or resentment I have, I'm trying to transform that into positivity and creativity, you know? And when I see a guy that's like, doesn't get that, like in your 30s, I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
I don't want to grow with someone like that. Absolutely not.
No. And it's like so good that you recognize these things too, because like, yeah, like to add to the list of things you have to have as like a performer, like you're a little bitter. Like you see people that see people that you know are not as talented getting farther.
Exactly.
Because so much of this is luck. So much of this is chance, right place, right time.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're gonna say you're the most talented person you're ever going to meet, but you have, like you said, the audacity to not perform, like go fuck off. Like you just aren't ready to deal with the truth of that statement.
Right. Right. And it's like being able to manage jealousy and resentment in an art, when you're on an artistic path, is a huge, huge mm-hmm. undertaking. It's, mm-hmm. it is a lifetime of self-work. And mm-hmm. One of my major, and I've done a lot of work surrounding that, of like, everyone's success is your success. Okay. A woman in comedy succeeds. That's, we're all succeeding. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, this is something that you have to remind yourself of every day. If you're not in that place, it's, and you're not even aware that you need to get to that place all of the time. Mm-hmm. It's like, you're so behind, you know, mm-hmm. you're so behind, and you're just blocking yourself from sharing whatever talent you have. You're blocking yourself. If you can't manage those emotions, that's a huge thing. Social media is a huge part of it too. Mm-hmm. Like managing your emotions around social media, huge, like huge undertaking, but has to be done. Like it's yeah. so important to figure out and be around people who have some positivity surrounding it, and whatever anxiety we have around it, like we all have it. You know, it's so important to figure out how to manage those feelings. And if you're not willing to even try, it's like, come on.
You know? Yeah. And if you're not willing to admit that's a problem too, because for a long time, I think we all go through like, you're just so angry. Everyone's doing so well on Instagram, on TikTok. Mm-hmm. Like I haven't even dived into TikTok. Like I have one to watch stuff, but I have not put any of my shit on there because I'm like, I don't know if I can handle another platform. And maybe yeah. there's just a boundary that I need for myself. Mm-hmm. Cause yeah, just learning how to deal. It's the moment it's you can, yeah. The moment you can ride the wave, like yes. the lows and the highs, and not to bring up Scotland. I feel like I keep bringing up Edinburgh in every episode.
Yeah.
I feel like I really learned it there. Like it's yes. this boot camp of like, it's like this immersive, like therapy, what yeah. they call it. Like it's not cognitive behavioral, but it's like, we're going to put you in your worst fear and you're going to have to mm-hmm. do it over and over again. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh, okay. One, everything's not real, what you're seeing online. Two, you are succeeding where you need to. It doesn't matter that you're not going like as fast as blah, 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 right. like, whatever. But yeah, like, it's like everything you just said, that like, if you're not willing to do that work or understand that it is constant, it's a constant mm-hmm. thing. And like, especially now, like being in comedy for like, say like 10 years, like you see who's done the work and who is content with themselves, and not content like where they are, but they're like happy with who they are, and yeah. then get on stage. Those are the ones that are like killing it in a way that the people that are killing on stage but haven't done the work ever will.
Yeah.
Because they're like, not like they're dead inside, but there's something missing. Like I yeah. love having a life outside of comedy. It's like, I do yes. have this other thing. Like I'm not going to do anything comedy wise this whole freaking weekend. Like,
yes.
Or you'll go crazy.
I know. I agree. And it's so important to have what I like to call ambitionless hobbies.
Mm.
I think that's really important because.
Ooh, that's really good. Actually.
It's good. Right. Yeah. I think about that a lot because I have a lot of things I love doing that bring me a lot of joy that have nothing to do with my career in comedy. I think they feed my soul, which is really important because you need that soul intact to be able to be enjoying yourself on stage and having as much fun as you can. And understanding that like stakes are pretty low in the grand scheme of things, stakes are low. That's like my new mentality this month is like, stakes are low. You know what I mean? I have this show coming up at Soho Playhouse. I have to remind myself how much fun I have on stage. I love performing and I love being on stage and it's just so fun for me. So I try to remember that. And then my ambitionless hobbies include, like I do a lot of, I love going to karaoke. That's one. And I do a lot of like weird art projects. I love decorating my apartment. That's a big thing. I do a lot of photography. Like all these things are just good for my soul.
Yeah.
And I do have a lot of other like non-comedy friends too, which I feel like is important too.
It's really important.
Yeah.
Because like, I'll definitely see some of my friends that are like on shows every day, mm-hmm. multiple shows every day, and they're exhausted and sad, like, but there's just something that I know, like they don't feel fulfilled or they feel like it's not enough. And I think learning too of like within comedy and within relationships of like, I'm enough. Mm-hmm. What this is, like, what I bring is enough, and it's going to resonate with certain people, and it's not going to resonate with everyone else, and it's going to jive with certain people, like, who I date or I'm with, like, friends with. And that's important to, like, recognize that, because that's, like, for me, it was like, oh, like, I'm not a burden in any way, relationship wise, platonic wise, career wise, like, I bring something to the table. And for me, I think that was the biggest thing that I had to relearn. I think, like, I relearned it in that break in COVID, like, cause I was really like on a downward spiral before in 2019. And I was like, I don't know if I can do this anymore. But then once I learned, like, I bring something to the table, not that I have to, but, like, I have worth in this thing that I'm creating and in this relationship and, like, in this, like, friendship, like, this is why I'm here. Or it's like, this is why this friendship relationship needs to end, because my worth isn't being recognized, or it's not fitting correctly. Like, it just doesn't work. I feel like I forgot where I got here, but yeah, just like, and then just like finding someone, or people that just get that and respect that, and also are willing to recognize that too. Like, I don't know about you, but as one, a Leo and a comedian, I need constant validation in every source, like, from my family, from my husband, from my friends, from my show. And also learning that, like, that's okay. Like, that's just my fucking love language. Like, that's how you're going to make me feel confident. And that's okay. Yep. That's what I need. Yep.
That's actually very helpful to hear, because I feel like we all need that, you know, and I feel like I do too. I mean, I'm always performing and I'm constantly needing to feel seen and understood. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody wants that. And it's nice to hear you say that's okay. That's okay that you want that. And then you can also get that. And part of you needing that in a relationship is totally fine. Cause I think I have this thing of like, I shouldn't need that. I shouldn't want this. I shouldn't, but also like everybody wants it. Mm-hmm. We're just admitting it.
Yeah. We're just saying it out loud now. Like everyone wants it. Exactly. Yeah. My boss, when he first started a year or two, he was like, I want to know everyone's love languages. And I was like, oh my God.
Wow. Wait, what, I'm sorry. What job is this?
It's a customer service job. I do love my boss. He's great. He came in during a shit storm too. And he's really been great. But so I was like, okay. Like I was like, acts like money, monetary. And then I was like, I guess like, and this is before I was like recognizing like I needed this. I was like, I guess praise. And so every once in a while, he'll give me like, you know, DM me praise, like, hey, I noticed this, blah, blah, blah. And it'll change my whole fucking week.
Wow.
Like, I'll be like, holy shit, I forgot that I needed to hear that from you. Like, I need to hear from you that you think I am a good little worker bee for this like little job. I just need to hear that. That's all I need to hear. And I'm just
that's so funny.
Like, I'm just lighter. I'm happier. Yes. I'm springier. Yes. Like, I was talking to my, my shift manager is not the boss. And I was like, hey, is our boss okay? Like, he seems mad. And he was like, yeah, he's been like you can feel like a difference. And it's like, oh, and then it affects me a little bit. Cause I will never say I'm an empath, but other people's emotions highly affect me. I think empath is a little eye rolly, but
it's an eye roll moment for sure.
But I definitely like can feel other people's emotions. Yes. And I'm like, oh, like so-and-so is like upset. And like my boss, my other boss was like, yeah, like it's fine. But like, he was like, blah, blah, blah. Like I've said about some numbers or something. And I was like, oh, okay. But he's not mad at me, right? Like that was like my second question, but he's not mad at me.
Totally.
We're good. But yeah, like validation. And that's what I like about this podcast too. Is like, I will always admit like what I need, no matter how embarrassing it is. And validation is one of them. I don't think it should be embarrassing because we all want it.
That is amazing. I'm going to take this with me. I'm like, it is not embarrassing to want that, you know? Cause I do feel like I need it in a lot of different ways. One of the things is like, I feel like, I don't know why I have this, this can lead me into my show, Sex Witch.
Oh yeah.
I think I need, and then maybe saying this, cause sometimes I'm like, oh, I want the Sex Witch part to be at the beginning of the pod. I should have done that, but I do
an intro outro too. So I'm going to talk about that in the intro and outro as well.
Amazing.
And be okay, like, cool. This is the star. This is like the creator of amazing. It. Yeah. Don't worry. I got you.
Perfect. Perfect. So I feel I have this thing of like, I don't want people to think I'm dumb. I think I have this thing of in me. I'm like, people think I'm dumb or something. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's true. I don't think people are thinking about me really at all, but there's that fear. And I think that comes from my experience in this, basically, you know, my first sexual romantic relationship was with this teenage witch girl, and we were witches together, and that's what the show is about.
Oh my and God. I know. I love this.
It's cute. But it was also very dark because she sort of convinced me that we had these powers and that she was the powerful one. And she was training me to be eventually be a powerful witch and all of this stuff. And there were all of these people that she could channel into her body, like celebrities and shit, who were witches and warlocks. And then she would like bring these people into her body. And then we would like make out. And that was like my experience in witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
And there's way more to it, obviously. Like, please come see the show. It really goes deep into it. Yeah. I'm going to comp you. So for real. And I'll give your husband a promo code. I don't know if I could comp Aaron.
I would actually want to pay. I'd want to pay for both of us because support the arts. Like, I would absolutely want to pay, but thank you.
Thank you so much.
Of course.
Yeah. So that's what the show is about. And I think I felt tricked by this girl, you know, because mm-hmm. I was so all in. And this comes back to what I was saying earlier of like, at a very young age, I was just like, you just got to go for it. I was always a theater kid. I was always like performing, and I had a lot of anxiety and a lot of fear in me from a very young age, just like deep visceral anxiety going on. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking like, you better just power through this because your whole life is going to be you being around people. Like, you need to work through this social anxiety. You need to work through this and you need to go for it. So I feel like she was someone who kind of I felt seen by her. Mm-hmm. I felt seen and understood. And I felt like my creativity at that age was respected mm-hmm. by her. And then that's why I felt like I could trust her to go on this witchcraft journey, which turned out to be, you know, her tricking me and her kind of abusing me. I mean, honestly. So it's a very dark subject, but obviously the show is funny. I would never bum anyone out for an hour. I would never do that. So it's, but I think in dating now, I think I can be on guard a little bit. Like, is this person making fun of me? Are they kind of tricking me? Are they out to get me? I think I have a little bit of that in me.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely something I've worked on, and I don't really feel it as much, but I sense that at times mm-hmm. because of that experience as a teen witch. Yeah.
Yeah. No, totally. I mean, she did. There was a major power dynamic to be like, I'm teaching you, I'm guiding you. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot, especially at that young of an age to experience and then deal with down the road. And those are some pretty formative years that that's going to stay with you a little bit. And that's okay.
Yeah.
And I think, I can't remember where I learned this. It was either my therapist or a TV show, but it was like, it was something they were saying, like, I'm an alcoholic. Like, it's just who I am. It will always be with me no matter what, if I never like drink or something like that. And like they compared it to something else too. Cause like I have OCD. So I was like, and you get very shamed about it. Like in your head, no one cares. Yeah. And I was like, I just have OCD. Like, it's just part of who I am. It's never going away. No matter if I never have a compulsion or if I never act on a compulsion ever again, it's just in me. It's who I am. So it's like, oh, I dealt with this as a child. Like, I had this, like, you know, ultimately shitty witch ex girlfriend, and it's just going to always be a part of my story. And like, that is okay.
Yeah.
And it does like feed into like social anxiety and stuff like that too. And it's always so interesting to hear like other female comedians, because it's like, we live the same, like, not the sex witch part, but it's like, having to like plow through social anxiety, having to plow through like all this stuff, because you knew you wanted this, which also just what makes all these women so fucking cool, is because you're 13, 12, 13, 14, and you're like, I don't care what I have to do, I will get there. And so many people don't have that energy or that mindset. And it's like a very powerful, very cool energy to be around. Even like last night, normally I don't hang around after shows, but I was like, oh, I really like Rachel and Kirsten. Like, I haven't seen Kim in a long time. And it was like, the energy was just so great. I was like, everyone here is happy doing their thing. And like mutually respects everyone. And that's like really fucking cool. Like, I love this.
It is. It is. And I love that too. And no, that's really helpful to hear. Like, okay, my OCD is a part of me. That's okay. this relationship is a part of me. That's okay. I've been reading this book called Fuck Feelings recently. It's pretty helpful. Yeah, I like it. It's kind of, it sort of frames itself as like the last self-help book you'll ever need. And I kind of like it because it's like, it sort of speaks to that sentiment that you just touched on of like, look, life is tough. There's a lot of emotional trauma that you're going to have to deal with just all of the time. And basically the goal is to acknowledge that negativity. You don't have to be this like toxic positive person, which is sort of creepy, you know? But you can acknowledge that negativity and you just have to be able to understand how to not let it rule your life. Like you can't let this negativity rule your life and whatever that means for you. And I'm like, okay, that is helpful. That's helpful to me. But yeah, I mean, it is really nice to be around, yeah, like female comics. I mean, I'm around those are like some of my really, I mean, Kim and Rachel are like my really good friends. I mean, I hang out with them all the time. You know what I mean? And Kirsten, I see all the time too. Like they're all such great girls. And like, it is really nice to be around people who I think they're not engaging in any level of self-deception, if that makes sense. They're just very true to themselves and very true to what their soul is telling them to do. Also, what I think is rare is even having a little song inside you that's telling you to go try this thing. That doesn't happen all the time either. So you have to kind of honor your passion when you have it at all. Some people don't. And I forget how lucky we are to even have this crazy drive and this struggle to, you know, it's like some people don't even have this struggle with their passion. It's like, I'm at war with my passions every day, you know, and it can be exhausting, but it's like, I'd rather that than, again, not even knowing what to do. Or not being, we're being crippled by my anxiety surrounding, you know, what I want to try and can't. I mean, it's interesting. And also it's like, this is back to the Fuck Feelings book. Another thing that it touches on is like, your life is always going to have problems. You're always going to have problems in your life. But what types of problems do you want, right? Like, do you want your problem to be like, I'm in a job I fucking hate and I hate my boss and I'm the smartest person there and everyone, but I'm scared to leave because I don't want to be the dumbest person at my job. So I'm never going to leave, but I'm going to complain about my job until I die. Is that the kind of problem do you want? Or do you want a problem that's like, I just started my own business and it's tough, but or I have a show that's coming up and it's tough. Like I have a lot of, you know, it's a lot of stress putting up a show at Soho Playhouse. Like it's a lot, but these are problems I want to have, you know? It's not like I'm answering to some boss I can't stand, you know?
Yeah.
And I've been in that situation many times where I've had like a bad boss and like, I've done like a million horrible temp jobs that I like hated. And I'm like, I don't want to do that anymore. And if I have to do it, it's a temporary thing, literally temp, but, you know, not temp to perm. I'm like, I will never go perm ever, ever. So, but it's like, yeah, what types of problems do you want to have? And it's nice to be around people who are like, we're all sharing the same anxieties. Like we're all going for things that we have anxieties about, that we're nervous about, but it's like, these are the types of issues I want to be dealing with. I don't want to be like, I don't want my main issue to be like, I just hate my life anyway. I hate the situation I've ended up in or whatever, if that makes sense, you know?
Oh yeah. It's like my biggest fear. I would be miserable. I don't know. I would be like a shell of myself if I didn't have something that I was working towards. And for a long time, I was afraid of that because it was like, am I always going to be unhappy in that sense? And it was like, no, it's just that this is a part of you that you really wanted. And this is what you're doing for it. To not know what you want, I would not wish that on anyone.
I know.
Like, or to know what you want and know you'll never go for it. Like that is the saddest thing for me too.
That's the worst, I think. It's better. Yeah, that's the worst. Yeah.
And we all do it. Like, there's always little things like the surfing. I literally was like afraid of sharks and I was like, I just can't do it. And then COVID happened and I like, it reset the whole, like, I don't want to have any regrets. Like, I know we all have regrets, but it was like, I want to know I tried to get on a surfboard and try to stand up. I will never be professionals. Like, not, I said snowboard, a surfboard, or I'll never be professional. I'll never be like amazing at it, but I want to know that I can do this. I can at least try to do this. Like, I want
did you,
to-
where did you surf?
So Rockaways.
Oh my gosh. I knew you were going to say Rockaways because I've had a couple other friends take lessons there.
They're great. Yeah. I love it.
So cool.
I highly recommend if anyone wants to do it. But it was like in COVID, it was like, what are the things that I have not done that I want to do? Like Scotland was one of them. It's like, I have to do this. I don't know what's going to happen.
That's how I felt too. That's how I felt too when I did it.
And, and we talked about it before and it's like so much and so hard and so scary. And like, I'm so glad I did it. Like, I'm so glad. And it was just like, it is just like, anything that I can control, I don't want to regret it. Anything that I'm in control of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cause I have this thing in me, like my soul will die if I don't like it. I follow the fear. Like I follow the fear, and I've done so many things that I was terrified of. And now I'm not like, I mean, and my body understands now, like, this isn't something you're scared of anymore. I remember the intense physical horrifying anxiety I had, like the day I knew I was going to do stand up for the first time. I was like, I was shaking, but I was like, you're going to do this. I had already been performing for like years, but this was different because this is like you know,
it's all you. Yeah. No one to like fall back on.
Yep. And I remember telling myself in the beginning, being like, just give yourself permission to be terrible. Just give yourself permission to suck. And like, then, you know, you go through all the waves of like, well, now I actually can't suck because there's more pressure. But then you sort of get into a different place of like, well, there's no pressure, but you don't really suck anymore. So you don't have to worry about that. And then still allowing yourself to suck on some level and moving on. I mean, there's so much that goes into it, but the no regrets thing, that's pretty big. It's pretty big. I think if I were to get hit by a bus, like tonight, let's say, like, I'd be like, I have no regrets. Like I really went for it. I did. There's nothing I didn't go for. You know what I mean? I mean,
it's totally good. Every time I fly, cause I'm so afraid of flying. It's just like the one way I don't want to die.
Yeah.
I'm always like, if you die on this flight, would you die happy? Like I ask myself that every time. And I'm usually like, usually like I'm good, but I just don't want that. Like we're falling 20,000, 30,000 feet.
And I've done nothing I wanted to do.
Right. Like regret everything, like regret not taking the chances. Mm-hmm. Also, wasn't Follow the Fear the Pitt's logo?
Oh my God. I think it was.
It was.
Yeah.
UCB was Don't Think and the Pitt was Follow the Fear, which again, it just goes back to like a lot of my life started the moment I was like, I have a lot of bad memories there and I have a lot of good memories there, but it's everything changed the moment I stepped into that door.
It's so true. It's so true. The moment you're in that dressing room, just
just getting railed.
Getting fucking railed. It's that so dressing room.
So normally at the end of the convo, I do ask, was there anything we didn't talk about that you wanted to talk about?
I think I'm good. I feel very, I felt like this was a very cathartic conversation for me.
Oh yeah. No. Anytime I'm like trying to explain what it's going to be like before, I always want to be like people say that all the time at the end. They're like, that was cathartic. And it's like, yeah, it's like, we're going to get deep in a way that you weren't expecting in a very like easy way. And I don't know how to ever explain that to someone before we start recording.
Well, I also was so, cause you know, I've been doing a lot of other podcasts like to promote the show. And I just knew it would be so like easy with you. Also, I know you, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm, like not super well, but I literally saw you last night. Like, and I'm like, hey Natalie, oh my God. And so, I mean, I just knew that it would be easy and chill. And so I'm grateful.
Oh, yay.
Yeah, it was really nice.
Thank you guys for listening. Please rate, like, subscribe, review, go see Sex Witch musical off Broadway from the 19th, which is already passed, till May 6th. So see it till May 6th. You will love Sex Witch the musical. You will love Maggie. Go follow Maggie at Mags Lal. So MAGSLALS. And go have a great rest of your week. Go have a good time. Go masturbate if you want. It's that what you want to do? Go do it. I actually think I'm going to do it right now because I need a little nap or need to be energized. And depending on my mood, masturbating will do that for me. So we'll do one of those. So live, laugh, love, masturbate. I will see you guys in 2 weeks.